The Monk Show will begin shortly. First, a quick disclaimer. We had technical difficulties with Kevin's microphone, so he will not be audible, which may be better anyway. LOL. The technical difficulties will be resolved on the next podcast. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. This is The Monk Show.
Ready to go. Okay. 3, 2, 1, go.
Folks, attention, for the monks are coming up here. It's monk time now. Yeah!
Oh, nice. All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Monk Show. Thank you, Steve, for that. What is this?
Come on now.
It's the monk. It's monk called time. Monk time.
Right on. Well, you know what? We used to have this little podcast a while back, and we didn't really have a name for it. So we thought we'd get it started again, and this time we actually have all the hookup. We have two of the same people. My name's Andy with The Monk Show. The name of the show is The Monk. We're not monks, and this is really not a show, so that's the disclaimer right there. We have...
Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah. All right.
And Steve.
By the way, Steve's responsible for the music.
I found this song by the monks, and I had to figure out a way to make the monks work for the name of the show. It just seems so perfect.
What do you mean you had to find a way to make it work?
The word monk as the name of the show.
Where did they say monk? I didn't even hear it. It's just the name of the band?
Are you crazy? Did you not listen to the intro?
No, I didn't hear it.
It sounds like a 60s song, yeah. So Kevin's all over it.
Oh, God.
All right. I'm going to give the intro one more time. Let's see. You got to hear the beginning.
Okay.
That's the whole reason.
I'll listen this time then.
Hey, hey, folks. Attention, for the monks are coming up here. It's okay. Monk time now. Yeah!
You know, I was so like focused on like announcing the show and like what the name of it was, thinking of what to say. I didn't even hear that. It kind of sounds like a little bit Scooby-Doo-ish, but I dig it.
It was awesome.
Okay, anyway. What is our show about? Okay, so we don't really have a format. We're just basically... What do you think? I'm not doing too well. I think this might like be edited, but in case it's not, I suck right now. And last time on the podcast, we basically talked about anything that came to our mind, whatever was going on at the time. And Kevin would usually bring up like the topics, and so I would feed off of that. But right now he's not saying anything, so it's not working. You know, Steve and I were just talking about that the other day.
About the what?
Ebola virus.
Oh.
You know, okay, so I don't read the news. I don't watch the news.
Riders.
I don't watch the news. I don't read the news. I hate the news. It's all negative. So, you know, and what you notice also is that when you're watching the news or listening to the news, they're basically directing you. Like, basically, they have like whatever news piece that they're doing at the time, you have to wait. And then whatever interests you, they say, oh, well, this is coming up next. And then you have to listen to all this crap for like 20 minutes or whatever, however long it is, to get to the news piece that you want. So it's basically they're directing you. Maybe it's commercial. It's infotainment, because it's obviously, you know, it's obviously not the most important things that's going on. Because what, every holiday season, what? They have like a piece on somebody fucking making a pumpkin or carving a pumpkin. Who cares about that, right? But yet it's like at the top of the hour. So basically I don't watch the news, but the Ebola virus, for some reason, it spurred my interest, maybe because I was afraid I was going to get it. I looked it up, and I there was a nurse in Spain that had contracted it. So that was cause for alarm, right? Because, you know, like, here's why I think it was cause for alarm, because it shows you, like, how easy it can be contracted. Because, you know, you got tons of you got tons of medical workers or whatever you call them working on this, and then you know that it spreads that way. And plus, they are supposed to be trained to not do that. Of course, there's mistakes that happen, but I, you know, as I read further, it said that in Africa, when they actually handle the dead bodies, they have to wear these hazmat suits. Okay, they're wearing hazmat suits to handle the dead bodies. Do you see? Have you heard of any hospital a nurse wearing a hazmat suit? And she contracted it, right? Which means she's handling that stuff. So where's the disconnect? Why is she handling that stuff in the first place? When they're handling the dead, like when they're handling actually the deceased in hazmat suits. And what does that tell you? If it's only
easily contracted.
It's easily contracted, but yet they say, oh, you can only contract it through like this, this, or that. But yet
they are. She was only cleaning another woman.
A diaper. She was cleaning a diaper. So that's kind of scary if you think about it, because you know what that tells me is that they really don't know enough about it to be giving that information. And plus, if you think about it, if you're a hospital and you work at a hospital, they're around infectious disease all day, every day. They're not going to be surprised. They're not going to be, oh, wow, another virus. They're not going to be scared, don't you think?
Right.
Yeah, they're just going to be like, no, oh, this is just another virus. And then they get infected, yeah. And all of a sudden it, you know, becomes bad news. So that's where the concern is, I think, right. Because it just kind of hit home.
Just nausea, vomiting, and fever. Everybody gets that for whatever basic flu virus. Yet they're handling somebody who.
Yeah, they're the most infectious.
Right.
when they're dead or dying or dead. I forgot it, but
well, yeah. That's they're symptomatic at that point. Where versus asymptomatic, they're saying that, and there's also virologists that are saying that we do not have any guarantee. We don't know how it's transmitted if somebody's asymptomatic. We don't have the actual proof. Even though they're saying, oh, you cannot transmit it when they're asymptomatic, because we don't have proof saying that it doesn't.
Well, why the heck are they saying that this is the way that they
transmit? They have to. Otherwise, there's panic.
Well, wouldn't you want to be the people that are safe? Like, if let's say there's martial law or something going.
They're preparing for that.
But you have to be truthful, don't you think? Why would you panic? What kind of panic are you talking about? Are people going to like run and stampede each other, running away from the Ebola? You know what they're going to do is they're going to go to the store and probably buy whatever they need to or take the proper precautions. I think that's a bunch of bull. Don't you think? It just sounds like it's something that's not making sense there. You know, and it's just they don't know about it.
Wouldn't
exit the country? Not necessarily. If I have the information... I mean, it's not going to crawl into my house. Why would you exit the country? Well, in extreme cases, yeah, maybe. Yeah, everybody's going to like stampede each other and kill each other to get on that plane to get out of here. Everybody can afford a ticket. That's, you know, this is the closest thing to it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
If it goes airborne, you're talking.
What if it's already airborne? We don't know how it's transmitted. True. Okay, here's. Proof, like in studies.
They all died.
In studies?
Of Ebola, yes.
Is this documented?
Yes.
Wow.
That's what the movie was based on, Outbreak, but it's actually true. A lot of people don't know, but...
That movie was about Ebola?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Holy.
I never saw that.
Wow.
Justin Hoffman?
I don't like
it. And Cuba Gooding Jr. and Donald Sutherland?
Yeah, they're all right.
No, the movie's awesome.
I haven't seen it.
It's like... Whatever movie from the 80s that you love and you stop down, if it's on USA Today or whatever TNT, I watch it.
Really, it seems boring to me. Oh, anyway. Okay, here's the other thing that I noticed, right? So I kind of followed up on it. And I was wondering how this nurse actually contracted it, if they really know. They say, well, yeah, she handled a diaper.
Which nurse is this, by the way?
This is in Spain, in Madrid. There was like a hospital. And it was on like the headline news, and it's raised concern amongst, I don't know about the government, but at least the media sources, and basically you can't trust either one of those. So what I was thinking was that, you know, I started to think, they said, okay, well, she was cleaning his stuff whenever he died, and it happened to be a diaper or whatever it was, but then they don't really know exactly. So I read this blurb that says, they said that it was from her wiping her nose or touching her nose with her gloves on.
Seems logical.
Seems logical, but they deduced that what? From interviewing her? How does she know that's what she did? How often are you doing stuff to the day where she can actually remember wiping? How many beds does she clean in a day, in a week? I mean, it's like constantly, right? So what they're doing is they're trying to kind of almost lead. They have what they think it is, and they try to like present the evidence so that they can say that, okay, well, we found what it was. Well, she touched herself, so it has to be transmitted by that. Right. What if it was airborne? You know? What if it was that? And I'm thinking worst case scenario. Yeah. You know, it could be what they said, and it could be, you know, more than that. I don't know at this point, but I think they don't know enough.
It seems like that if it was airborne, it'd be even much more of a problem.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, oh, gosh. But we're not around those people.
Even in West Africa, I guess.
Yeah. Well, how do you explain that? Okay, the police and in Frisco, is it Frisco?
Yeah.
Now, he got sick. How did he handle that guy?
But he didn't get Ebola. He's
negative. Oh, he just had flu?
Yeah. Just regular flu.
How freaking, like, coincidental.
I know. He was probably freaking out for a couple days.
the one virologist, you know, the Ebola virus, RNA virus, and he said what that's doing is before when there were only small outbreaks of a couple hundred.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're over 8,000 in just 3 weeks.
In the United States, or globally, okay, yeah.
But they also predicted on the computer models, when I was looking at it a month ago, they predicted when it would hit the U.S.
Wow.
Knew. And then we have the Spain outbreak, and there's also additional to that, Macedonia, which is a small country.
How do they know?
Well, they've already tested these guys.
No. How do they know? How do they predict? It's statistical?
Yeah. And they've got, obviously, these algorithms based on, you know, previous history of what's gone on already. They study that. And then
that makes sense. Yeah.
They can do that based on population. Travel. There's 6,000 people from Nigeria to America every week.
So what does the study say about, like, let's say, like, okay, obviously, we're all asking this because at some, you know, like on some level, we're kind of worried about ourselves, and, you know, whoever's listening is probably worried too. Like, what does that mean to us?
The reason why I was saying that was because these exponential growth of the dead, every one of those infections, this is an RNA virus. So every infection, genes in it mutate. So we're playing genetic mutation.
Yeah. It's like a strand, like building. Yeah.
For it. At one of those points, becoming completely airborne, where it's like the normal flu virus would run through millions, billions.
Which means it's morphing to like survive. It's like basically it's a mutation
I fear the most recent blood, if you were to take from one of these patients that has it, he goes, I would fear to look at what the virus looks underneath the microscope versus the original. He goes, I bet you it's. Because it's changing.
Oh, you know what?
It does.
So does he study this stuff? Why the heck is he afraid to do that? He probably should have seen it by now, what it looks like under a microscope.
He understands the...
why does he look at it?
The brevity of the
situation. Wow, that's pretty good. Did you have to Google that one? Oh, by the way, we didn't have Google last time. The last few podcasts, we have Google. That's pretty good, Kevin. Yeah, so... You didn't answer the question. What does that mean to us? What does that mean to the average person? I mean, is there anything we can do? Do we just sit back and just watch the news and all this? What is it called? Like, they're not predictions, but they're just like guesses. Yeah? We just wait back? How do you be prepared? What is your definition of prepared? How would you be prepared? I mean, look, both of y'all have kids, right? What do you mean when you say prepare? How would you like, I mean, like, what do you do now? I mean, like, both your kids go to school, right? Do you worry about that? Or do you trust the schools enough to say, oh yeah, they got my kids?
No, I don't trust the school. I would never rely on the schools to do the parenting.
Yeah,
there's
been schools either in Frisco and then also Highland Park, the sheriff that checked in, you know, whether or not he had Ebola, his daughters. sheriff's daughter may have been in contact with him after you got in contact with that patient. That's how the steps that people
take. I mean,
but
are you nervous?
No.
No?
No.
You think it's just like a, it's just like statistics, right? Either you're going to get it or you're not going to get it. And
well,
it's just chance, right?
I think if it's going to creep its way out to where I am, it's going to have to take some steps to get out there. You know what I mean? I don't think all of a sudden somebody in a hospital in Dallas is going to come in contact with some people that are going to just carry it on their shoe out to Rockwall.
You'd be surprised. You know? Seven whatever things of bacon, Kevin Bacon, right? Everything's connected, right? 6 degrees.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe if it starts to get a little closer, then, you know, I think
that's your mic away from your mouth.
I can hear it fine. That's what's crazy.
I can hear you fly too. I don't think the computer can. That was a good topic. Okay, dead air.
So I was talking about news, right? And you don't like to watch the news. And I don't think you have to. I think watching the news is a little bit old school now.
What do you do?
Twitter. Right?
That's a news source? Come on.
It's a news source. Completely a news source.
Well, how reliable? Well, I guess it's just as reliable as anything else.
Okay, for instance, you follow CNN. You follow MSNBC. You follow Huffington Post. You follow all these different news outlets. And they kind of just give you a little blurb of what the stories are. And you kind of curate your own news. You know, you don't have to filter through.
You follow up, basically.
Yeah.
On the ones you're interested in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I like. Because, you know, I do... How I read about this is like I do scan, you know, like the front page comes up and it'll have a headline that might spur my interest like this right here. So I follow up on it. So yeah, I think I can agree with you there. And it's a better format because you are deciding what you want to see.
Totally.
I mean, they're still advertising, so they do still direct you. But I just don't like that feeling of being manipulated because every time you turn on the TV, it is all manipulation. Every single commercial. Everything is manipulating you. Like, you know, a lot of the stuff, a lot of the commercials that you see, it kind of dictates what the trends are, what the fashions are going to be. You know, they have the good looking people on there. Like, I want to be good looking like them. You know, I want to look like them. I want to be cool like them. The girls around like Tom Vu and the real estate thing. Oh, look at my beautiful girls, right? Yeah, you look at that and you go, well, I want to be like that. So you want to like either buy the clothing, wear the cologne. I want to smell like them. So it is. It's basically shaping you and everybody around you. And I think everybody just goes through life accepting that. I mean, it's not a bad thing, I don't think. I mean, it's not like harmful for anything. I just think, me personally, I think it's a little bit invasive, kind of intrusive. It's a little bit underhanded. Underhanded, is that the right word? Yeah, underhanded.
The news in general? Like the just local broadcast news? Or
media
all
in general. Media like commercials, news, even TV shows.
I think really it's all getting very personal on what you're taking in. You know, you don't even have to have...
What do you mean personal?
Like, you watch what you want to watch when you want to watch it. It's very seldom nowadays, especially the younger the kid gets, the less reliable he is on broadcast television. You know, who's broadcasting... Yeah, it's all on demand for these kids.
Because I'm not in touch, man.
I'm getting there myself. You know, I very rarely watch a TV show that's on unless it's sports because you don't want to watch sports, you know, the next day or whatever.
That's true. I get your point. Oh, so where?
Like YouTube.
That's the next cat jumping. In our beautiful studios in Dallas with animals running everywhere. Downtown Dallas.
Like Savannah, right? She doesn't watch TV anymore. You know, a lot of kids will start watching Disney.
Tell me this. Why? How does she find out about that? How does she find out about the shows? Is there like a menu she looks through?
I think right now she's like 90% YouTube.
Okay. So
everything she watches, she finds on YouTube.
YouTube kind of like manipulates her by putting the stuff that kids might like. And then kids like a certain thing. So they put up stuff. It all has to do with marketing, right? All of this, even what she watches, they see, okay, well, all these kids, you know, they represent a certain like demographic. So we're going to put up these ads for the videos that she watches. But how does she get there?
They want to go viral.
Yeah, how does she get there? How does she find out about those things? Is it what she sees pop up or does she looks for what?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I think it's manipulated. At one point or another, something is... is like kind of directing everybody in a subconscious way almost, you know?
That will have to be the case because in the end, who's paying for these is the advertisers. So without the advertisers, a lot of this stuff's not going to get done. So there's going to have to be a way for those guys to get in there.
Yeah.
And then they'll guide it as much as they can, I think. And YouTube gets revenue dollars from every click, or I don't know how that works. That's a very complicated thing to me, how YouTube makes
relevancy,
money.
Like, and popularity, all those things count because it means money. And not even money to the person who posted the video. It's money to YouTube. But whoever is the, you know, the stakeholders of that organization. And so does Savannah come to you and like say, Daddy, I want to see this movie or I want to see that movie? And then you have to pay for the whole family to go see it. You know what I'm saying?
No, we really don't go to the movies.
Do you go to movies?
That's pretty unusual.
With your kids?
A lot of family
they do. Actually take you to movies, right? How do you think they find out about those movies? During the shows that they watch, they're a demographic, right? They run those ads. How do they find out? You know, their friends tell them, you know, sometimes, but their friends found out somewhere. It has to start somewhere. But they give you an answer. How do they know what the answer is? Every movie you go see is about a book. You know where I'm going with this, right?
Advertising.
Exactly. Advertising. Yes, I'm not like a comment. I'm not like, you know, one of those like conspiracy. I'm not totally to the left. I'm somewhere in the middle. But, you know, I just find it like personally, I find it a little bit invasive that I don't like the fact that I'm being, you know, like, but, you know, it goes as far as this. Not even philosophers, some doctors and some, you know, a lot of philosophers, some scientists believe that we are automatons, meaning that we really have no free will. We don't really have a choice because our life, our consciousness reacts to stimulus. That's what spurs us to make a decision about doing the next thing. So everything's based on stimulus, right? So we're automatons, meaning that one stimulus after another. It spurs a thought, and then over time, it creates like a taste. You know, we like this.
That's the whole point of this show, is that we are responding to it. Discussing it.
Yeah, so everything's a stimulus. That means we're kind of automatized. We're just like, you know, if there were no stimulus, we'd be sitting around like staring head into space with nothing. You know, even a thought is a stimulus. Even like a physiological like reaction in your brain, like say your heart beating, can be a stimulus in itself, right? You react to everything. So,
straight up the sky. Don't look. Oh, what are you doing? What are you doing?
That's a stimulus. What are you doing? That would be pretty dumb society, dude. I would think like there would be some variety to that, variations. If somebody says, "What are you doing?" and somebody else says, "What are you doing?" Are they all going to look up at the sky? What do you got?
Remember that link I sent you earlier today?
About, I forgot.
Well, I'm trying to look it up around. About the 432 hertz tuning.
Yes. You were going to save that for a future podcast. No, okay, go ahead.
Well, you brought up about... what did you bring up?
what I said, what I remember was that it is a different take of something that I kind of like learned about or I kind of thought about before.
I guess when you're talking about stimulation, it got me thinking that about this because our bodies are 70% water.
Is it?
Not water.
Is it 70?
Or maybe even more than that.
Yeah, I think it's more than that. Maybe 70 is right. Maybe 70. 75, I think.
We'll split the difference. 75 is good.
74.2. Okay.
But there's frequencies, you know, that water within our bodies, you know, equalized to, I guess. I don't know what the terminology would be.
It's homogenized.
I don't think that's the one.
It's something stasis.
It resonates. Yeah, it resonates, I guess.
So
with a certain frequency.
Can you describe for our audience what you're talking about? Like what the general, like, you know, like what the, like give a summary of like what that article you sent me is talking about.
Yes,
and you can read it too.
I'm pulling it up, so I'm not speaking out of my ass here.
Like Kevin. Kevin, you're not even talking, dude. You're supposed to be the one that drives the conversation. Steve's doing a great job, by the way.
So there's this article.
There's an audio resonance frequency.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, there's this article that Prince.
You're jumping ahead of the article, so Steve's gonna like Prince, give a background on.
Prince has one Facebook post ever, and it was about this frequency of tuning music to a certain frequency. And right now, all music is kind of the way it's recorded. It's all set to like 441 or something like that.
That is the, you know, like when you have a tuning fork. Like, you know, like say if there wasn't some type of standard for how you tune your instruments, nobody would be able to play in a band together because everybody would be out of tune with each other. So they set a standard as far as like what is that key note that to tune everything based upon that note. And it has some scientific, you know, background concerning that. It's not just arbitrary.
It's 440. It's 440.
440, yeah. Okay.
And there's a lot of history about it, and it kind of got established in the early days of recording is when they kind of established this. And Hitler apparently used it.
What?
For 440. He liked 440 because it instilled chaos almost. It
was, 440 instills chaos? I don't make the connection there. It seems like it resonates.
It's a very intriguing subject.
Yeah, it's making me interested. It's kind of like far from what I'm thinking. I was just thinking in terms of resonant and how things happen.
Okay. So let's just say, for instance, your body is tuned to 440. So that's a very comfortable thing. And so, but I mean, 432. Let's say your body resonates at 432. Okay. And all the music is at 440. And it kind of disturbs that pattern of frequency. And it maybe makes people uncomfortable without knowing it, you know?
I think what came to my head is that I actually had this conversation with a guitarist that used to be in our band. And we talked about this. We talked about resonance versus dissonance, right? And I forgot what the definition was. Kevin doesn't have Google, so you can't look it up. I can't look it up because I'm lazy. But dissonance and resonance, you know, like resonance is when everything like it vibrates at a pleasing frequency to our ears, right? Everything makes sense. It jives. Dissonance, there's something to it. There's I think like, you know, like if you broke down distortion, there's a dissonance in there, like how distortion works. This is all scientific. It's pretty interesting. So people are used. And so here's our discussion. What would interest you is that I like dissonance. Mm-hmm. I feel like at ease certain dissonant sounds. You know, it's I don't know if it's like something that spurs my intellect, you know, the intellect part where I say, wow, this is interesting. You know, it spurs me to think. It doesn't bother me. There are some sounds that do bother me, but a lot of really melodic stuff makes me uncomfortable. It drives me up the wall. It's just so like just normal. It's just so, you know, it I react to it as if somebody reacted to dissonance. Can I play something? Talking to the mic, and you can. Sure. Is this okay? So, how do you feel when you hear it? It makes you feel at ease, right? It makes you feel like cool. Like
go to sleep to it.
See, it's like I think like when you're a baby, you naturally like resonance, right? I think it's a learned behavior. It's a learned, like, preferences, you know?
I want you to teach me this.
I don't have the millennium. That's not dissonant to me. That one chord was kind of. He's off key. I think he's just off key. He's not dissonant. He's not. How do you know he's on purpose off key? They said that?
They said his most maddening time where he was just so jacked out.
That means it wasn't intentional.
But they recorded a lot of it. Like, you hear him talking, to, like, in between, like, messing up.
Okay, it was intentional recording, but not intentional performance.
But they produced some of the songs, you know, doing their best with them, and you can tell there's a lot of, like, Gilmore influence in the wall from this.
This is not dissonant at all. I mean, you gotta hear some of the stuff I'm talking about. This is kind of pleasing, actually. No, that's not even dissonant. I'm talking about like this just genre of music that's like totally dissonant and not even what you're talking about, which is kind of uses some dissonance. You know, like, I think, you know what I think it is? Like, at a certain point, it doesn't become music anymore. That's my opinion. You know, you can argue that everything's art, but I think a lot of it is shock value. You want to be different. So these bands, they come out with a new genre. They just like so, and I think that part of it has to do with me not liking it, me hearing something that's so like just like pop and you know, like pleasing, it just drives me up the wall. You know, that's also maybe related to the whole shock value. People want to be different, so they want to like be, you know, set out from the rest. So they kind of push this envelope. They go, hey, you know what? I like dissonant stuff because it's cool. Just because it's not like something else. Me, I honestly, a lot of dissonant stuff, it makes me feel at ease. So, wow, it just really vibes with my brain. And a lot of like melodic stuff. Is there anything dissonant that you like?
To be honest, I'm sitting here trying to think of what's the difference. What is? I don't know if I could know one if I heard it.
Dissonance would be I wish I had this hooked up. We're not prepared, so we might even just keep this. I'm going to look it up. We're going to hook up one of these laptops so we can actually show what dissonance is, so that all three of us have access to the internet. So we're not going to like pull the wool over your eyes. We're actually going to stop tape here, and then we're going to get a little bit more prepared to go deeper into this conversation. Go in 3, 2, 1. We are on. Who is this? Air. I've never heard of Air. It's pretty cool. Whoa. Can y'all feel the vibe? Don't get it. For any. Stay with me. Whoa. We're back, guys. We had to take a break. We weren't really prepared. So that's just, it was a long period of time up to y'all. It's like maybe what, 2 seconds that we were gone. We had to cut tape real fast. Cut tape. I'm like dating myself. We had to get prepared. We actually were talking about dissonant music. Were we talking about dissonant music or just dissonance in general?
In general.
In general. Okay, so Steve had asked me, because I had a conversation with a buddy the other day about dissonant music, and he, you know, we're talking like, at what point does music not become music anymore? And although I'm very to the left as far as like, you know, like taste and things, and I really like stuff that's different and strange. And when I hear something like dissonant, it kind of makes me feel at ease. When I hear something that's really resonant, like something that's really like pretty and too goody-goody, it really disturbs me. It makes me uncomfortable, actually. So even with that in mind, I heard some of this stuff, and it's not music. I think that, you know, like music to me, it... Hold on a second. Sorry about that. Sorry, we'll be right back. Sorry about that, folks. We had technical difficulties. Anyway, where were we at? I was saying...
How you like dissonant music?
Oh, yeah.
You don't like music that's too resonant with your...
What are you talking about? Okay, so I was saying... Yeah. So, you know, at what point does music not be music anymore? I mean, what is music? I mean, music to me is something that kind of moves me. You know, like, can you say something that totally disturbs you? And that's kind of not moving you. I mean, I don't think that's moving you. That's just, like, making you not like it. It's making you uncomfortable. It's not really moving you. I think music is something that inspires, like, not just inspiring, but it kind of, like, it inspires thought. It's, you know, it's reflective. It's some type of emotion. And yeah, some people argue that, okay, well, it's like a bunch of noise and it made you uncomfortable, right? That, to me, is not... That's not really, what's that, engaging. It's not really, what word am I looking for? Engaging? What is it? Engaging? What is it called? Anyway, what were you saying? Well, you're saying
what about those
that
are those that resonate? And they're engaging it, they'd be so sensitive. It bothers everybody else.
I do. I find a lot of dissonant music pleasing, but I'm saying at a certain level where there's no organization anymore. There's no meter. It's so dissonant that it's just a bunch of noise. And yeah, some people can say the stuff I like is a bunch of noise too. So, you know, it is subjective, but not really, because There's a scientific definition for it. You can measure consonants. No, not that you bring up. We have different tastes.
But you don't like anything.
I don't like anything with like less than 3 chords in it that you like.
You like things in moderation.
No.
Dissonance in moderation.
Yes, yes. That's a good point. Maybe not moderation. Yeah, dissonance in moderation. But in approach of like, there's got to be some type of structure to it. Yeah. If it's that same chord that I like the dissonance to, if it's just constantly going,
I win. Did you like club music?
Some of it.
The background, the one
monotonous. Yeah, but there was the beat. But there was the beat to that. Okay. That brought it all together. There was meter. There's something like that was motivating me. It was like inspiring me to like, wow, the beat gets into you and there's a rhythm going on. There's some kind of, that's resonance, right? That's consonance in that the meter.
That's way more pleasing.
And you need a little bit of structure to make a song.
Structure is part of it for me, at least. You know, this is all subjective again, because even that guy that we just heard say that, you know, like you can't even define it. But I think you really can to a certain level you can, because there's music theory. And they can tell you what dissonance and consonance is because back when music was forming, they kind of found the notes that was pleasing. And you notice that, with Western music.
Year, what century?
Yeah. What? 900 AD.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That was interesting. Yeah, because
I thought he was going to say like 1940.
I would imagine that when music first started becoming organized and documented, it was mostly what was pleasing for people. What made people... Like, you know, like when Beethoven came out, they thought it was the devil's music because it was so passionate that it inspired people to like have passion. Whereas music before was like more mathematical. It was like, oh, it's pretty. It was like the monks singing. It was like, but whereas Beethoven was passionate, it was like emotional. So that was evil because it made you think bad thoughts because the Catholic Church was in rule.
Audiologists study
Andy, by any chance, have you ever listened to a jazz artist called Sun Ra?
I think I've heard like one. I don't remember exactly what I heard, but that name, I remember looking that up. I don't remember what I heard. Maybe you can play us some.
Okay, I'll look some up.
Okay.
It's chaos. It's
I'd like
chaos
to see what I think
as jazz.
So is there any meter to it? Is there any rhythm?
Yeah, but that's different because you flow with it.
Do you know Sun Ra?
No, but I'm saying when I listen to a lot of jazz.
No, he's talking about avant-garde jazz. Yeah, he's talking about very to the left.
This is not Miles Davis. This is the next step beyond that.
It's not music to me.
No, it doesn't matter.
They go against reforms. What I'm saying, they are so trained in music, they know how to like break away from music.
But it's still pleasing.
But he's not talking about that. He's not talking about pleasing.
I don't. It's not pleasing to me.
Okay.
Maybe.
Why don't you play it? We'll decide.
Okay. I'll be honest.
He's interested in it, dude. It's intriguing.
You know, I
he doesn't like the music itself.
Here's the thing. Over the last 4 or 5 years, I've just been exploring jazz a lot.
Answer Kevin's question. Why are you exploring it?
No, I
some
just
of it's
want
like
to know.
To explore it, not listen to the same thing over and over again.
I went every week to the jazz club.
Yeah,
and
that's cool.
Yeah, but they're playing something like that standard jazz. Okay. He's talking about non-standard jazz. He's exploring new sounds. Nothing. He's intrigued by it. He's not listening to something that's familiar. He's looking for something different. This is different jazz. Jazz is not just a... Jazz is like no rules. There's rules, but loose rules. Seriously, there's no...
It changes almost every decade. There's kind of a different way that they approach jazz. And, you know, some people still will stick to the classic ways. And
It's called standard jazz. And then there's like, what is that called? Fusion? Jazz fusion?
Yes.
Which is a little bit... people always tried, like, they know music so well. They know the jazz so well. that they know how to leave the jazz. They know how to like break up that jazz. So if like, for example, a person who...
They'll jazz up the jazz.
That's right. They call it, it's called jazz it up, right? That's actually the right term. So for example, like, you know, like you, like say you heard Debbie Gibson song when you were growing up, like you all listened to them. Her all the time, right?
Sure.
Now, if you were going to play a song, you would say, oh, that's stupid. I want to play something like that. I want to play Nirvana. Is it like it's a little bit different because you know, you've already like, whatever, graduated past that point intellectually or whatever in your musical or whatever taste that you want to have something different. So you're tired of that. That's not, oh, everybody listens to that. That's so easy to listen to. So you move on. You kind of like evolve as a music listener and you're intriguing. Yeah. Whereas you, Kevin, you still like the same thing. Over and over.
All right, I found the Sun Ra
it's
album.
It's Bachelor Kevin Day.
That I've explored the one album, so this is as much as I know, and I'll just play the first song.
When you said Miles Davis, this is beyond that. Have you heard some of his more obscure stuff?
I think I've heard it all.
You've heard it all. Okay, so yes. This is beyond that. The weirdest stuff he does, because Miles Davis is he's very well trained. He understands the whole jazz theory and everything.
Miles Davis in the 50s and 60s is his best, the best trumpeter you can imagine. I mean, there's people argue that there's other trumpeters, but I really think that's the best.
By the way, I'm not like a jazz aficionado. I'm just like, you know, talking what I know about jazz. So I don't think I'm trying to be pretentious.
I'm not either.
We're just like talking about like, you know, stuff we're interested in. And a lot of stuff I learned, we have a friend who I was talking about earlier. He used to play in the band. That he was a jazz musician, and we talk about this all the time. So I learned a lot of this stuff from him, and I do love jazz, but the standard jazz, and maybe they call it fake jazz. I like the fake jazz, like what you hear in the '70s, the songs. He added like music knowledge. Yeah, he had a music degree, so he's kind of advanced in the theory aspect of it. So whatever he had, he wasn't satisfied with it. So he had to add a little bit more, and it all worked out. No, he did that. Yeah, I didn't do that one. It wasn't me. Say it again. Bad brains. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Was that how we sounded?
All right, I'm going to play some Sun Ra. See what you think about this.
All right. So
that sounds redundant.
Yeah. I do get it.
I know. So far, I dig it. I don't think it's that dissonant. That's what you hear at like the... Yeah.
It's, not really.
This is not dissonant at all to me. It's actually pleasing. It's not pleasing, but it makes me at ease. It's got a good meter to it, you know, a steady rhythm.
The drummer.
Yeah, he keeps it all together, kind of. Even the notes, because it's like, it's kind of talking to you. It's almost like a dialogue. See, I consider jazz some of this stuff, like fusion. It's like point and counterpoint. I don't think this is weird at all. You think this is weird?
That's pretty random.
I think it is.
That's pretty random. That's cool.
But it's pleasing.
I guess that's kind of where I'm going. Is it doesn't feel structured at all. It's kind of almost like
morphing.
I mean, you hear the word improvisational. Almost like this is almost like what they're thinking of on the top of their head.
Right.
There's a flute.
It's a feeling.
Exactly. But it's got working. Say that little piece. Although it's like it's not dissonant. You're saying it's random. It's arbitrary to you, kind of.
Yeah, it is.
Right?
It feels
but
like
it's not dissonant. Dissonant is where the notes clash with each other. This is not dissonant.
I don't think I was ever saying it was dissonant.
Okay.
I think I was just saying it's got a weird organization to it.
Okay.
And maybe I don't get it. And maybe some people do.
I got you.
No, the bass is wobbling.
It's layered in a way that doesn't feel organic.
I think it's... I can dig this stuff. Because it's like just...
I'm not
brush.
Actually... As I'm listening to it now, it sounds pretty cool. And I feel like...
It's a acquired taste.
Maybe,
right?
Maybe.
Yeah.
You know what? That's like the... Even while we're talking, that's real low in the background. While you're talking, you know, whatever we're talking about, subject-wise, if you had that real low, just get it away.
This is in your life more than you think, because this, like what he was saying, made me think, like, a lot of stuff you see on TV, TV shows, stuff like that, you hear the stuff in the background, right?
Every day when I walk around, I think I'm in the same band.
I'm gonna go to the next one.
We need to, drum fill.
I just want to see.
We need that sound bite drum fill.
Yeah. See if that was a good example here. Yeah. See, I don't even remember a piano in the last one.
That's like kind of cool. You know, like pleasing. Like,
but I think all these songs are very layered. They start out pretty simple, and they start building on each other, and these layers start.
At one point, this was the devil's music too. They said, "Oh, the kids are listening to jazz. All that weird stuff that you're listening to, right?"
This is 1961. So
this sounds like the stuff that those people in the marching band played, like in high school. Remember? They used to practice all the time. Not knocking it, because
That was probably one of the very, very first Sun Ra albums.
Okay, well I'm gonna throw something out there. Okay, let's play this again. And did you react the same way? Would you compare this piece right here? We found this a while ago, and this is a piece off of YouTube that is it's not a dissonant instrument like what I've heard, like the dissonant music that I've heard, but it is it's a piano. It's played on piano, but the composition is dissonant. So, you know, we just heard that jazz piece, which was not dissonant, which was not pleasing to me, but it was kind of cool. You know, I kind of got a vibe with it. Whereas this, I did not get a vibe for, and I do not enjoy it at all. In fact, I don't even like listen to it. So see what you all think about this. That's dissonant. Those notes. There's no meter either. It's like that. There's no meter.
They're walking down the alleyway and getting chased.
They did. They used a lot of dissonant music in the old shows. It was a popular movement. Did you see him, Joe? Which way did he go?
It's almost like you could do some beat poetry and get real weird.
That's the same. That's the same vibe, because they were trying to be. They were, you know, it's always some type of rebellion, right? It's the teenagers that rebel against, like, society, that rebel against their parents. Every single generation has a rebellious movement where they try to be not like the norm. I guess that was jazz. And this maybe at one point, what was it, in the 1100s? When was it?
Or the stagecoach.
When this came into being, this type of music, dissonant?
I have no idea. This is all new to me.
You all just said that a while ago. Somebody said what year it was.
Oh, 900 AD.
900 AD. So maybe back then, that's when they were rebelling, you know, against.
Yeah.
Right? Like against their parents.
Oops. I don't think lifespans were long enough to have that luxury of rebelling.
Your parents
were dead by the time you were a teenager, you know? Yeah.
They're like poison from a potato.
Yeah, I don't think you even got that.
That's
option.
Enough of that one. Wow, can y'all hear that? It's raining.
Look, okay, I'll play the most popular Sun Ra song just to get. Is it
coming?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mike posted.
I dig it, man. I think this is beautiful to me. This is an
artist I need to explore a little bit more about.
This is Sun Ra?
Sun Ra.
I dig it, man. I'm not just saying that to be different. I'm sure a lot of people do too. I mean, apparently he's popular, right? Is it he?
Popular enough, you know? I mean, I'm not sure a lot of jazz purists would go this direction, you know, but. You know, that's a subject.
That is awesome. Listen to that.
It's cool.
The composition, right? That is totally organized.
That's but like, that little boom, boom, seems a little out of place to me.
Maybe manifesto.
Yeah.
They do that. This song is kick ass, man.
I'm trying to figure out what year this is from.
Hey, you have to upload this to that Dropbox. I want to download it. At least this song.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know, that jazz name.
He samples a lot of stuff like this.
But you can sample his vocal over this. Like, master.
Crazy.
So that one was the opposite of dissonance or not pleasing. I thought that was an excellent song.
Very short. That was the whole song.
Well,
yep.
Let me see here. Okay, so I think we got the idea about dissonance. And how did this start? Why were we talking about like the 440 hertz? What were we talking about?
Prince brought that up earlier this week.
I forgot what he said.
He just posted a link to an article that was about, should we all be tuning our music to 432 instead of 440?
Okay.
And when I read that, I never heard of that before. So I'll read anything I don't know about, and I pretty much will believe anything I read. So I was all over it, you know. And it was just a very interesting subject to me, so, since I don't understand even what that means to tune your music to 432.
Yeah,
you described it a little bit when you talked about the tuning fork.
Yeah, that's a frequency. It's like it resonates at a certain frequency, like cycles. You know, like it creates that tone, and so that's the standard tone that everybody uses as a standard to tune to. So everybody, so that way everybody can play.
So if you have a tuning tool, can you set the frequency of that tool?
It would be a different size.
On
software? Like if it's an old school one, it would be just a different shape, a different size. On a piano, you would stretch the string, right, to different tensions. So therefore, you have the different, right? And then you tune that to the tuning fork, the middle string, and then you tune everything else. Either you have a set of tuning forks or you tune it to itself. You just stretch it. You know, you stretch it to... Yeah. So you know how piano works?
Saying that the lowest...
This is interesting.
The lowest note on a piano is like above
4. I don't think so. That doesn't sound right.
I don't know.
That doesn't sound right.
So you're saying like the middle C is
4. I think so. Okay. Yeah. So it's just like, you know, number one...
Base everything off of that.
Base everything off that. It's like, it's the most pleasing sound, and also I think it... tempo, I think the actual frequency... It somehow it has something to do with your heartbeat, like your
the 432.
One
that nothing is tuned to right now, unless people are doing it, you know, recently. But up until recently, everything's been 440. Because somebody set a standard.
No,
at some
he's
time.
Saying he what he's saying is that it's really 440 that they chose to be the standard, but really. The most pleasing one, what Prince is saying, is 432. Why didn't they use that instead of 440?
Yeah, so everything that we know up to now.
Can you have an example of something in
432? Well, there should be a lot of things in
432. There are some examples on YouTube.
Because they're playing in a different key. It's just that this is our tonal, or not tonal center. I'm probably using wrong terminology, but. So most of the stuff that you hear on the radio is probably 432. So if it's pleasing, then it's an interesting. Okay. I was going to say, Dave explained to me how a piano works. You like when you push the pedals, you get it sustains, and then you let go of the pedal, and it's like kind of cuts off. That's like the decay of it. Well, you know how that happens? If you open up a piano, there's two sets of keys on every string. And it's always going to, if you pluck a string, it's always going to sustain, right? Mm-hmm. The second string automatically, boom, hits it and deadens it. So therefore, you have that regular hit, like dung. You know how it just stops.
Yeah. So that's the second.
It leaves the other one from hitting it. It keeps the other one from hitting it. So therefore, it just vibrates, right?
Interesting.
So it's the opposite of what you think it is, right? Wow. It's like, isn't that cool? Who thought of that?
Yeah.
Who? Some smart motherfucker, right?
The harpsichord too late. Is where that started, right?
You need to sit over here and do the Google stuff. I'm too lazy.
So the harpsichord came before the piano.
Did it?
I believe so.
Probably, right?
I believe that was the first.
Because you see those Greek dudes, right, playing the harp?
Like Bach was kind of...
you harpsichord, not harp. I was thinking harp.
No.
I would think so. That would make sense. Because it's a... I think... Isn't the harpsichord like a... You think it's more complicated?
It's similar to a piano, but I think it's it was smaller and it had a higher pitch to it.
I think there's more moving parts to it, maybe?
Seemed like there was.
See, there was, right? And so the piano became a more refined, like, way that, you know, a more refined instrument that's like more simple.
We're probably giving out bad information here.
Yeah, we're just guessing.
We should take a music history instrument.
The person who invented the
Oh, Bartolomeo.
I can't believe it's Italian.
Yeah. They invent everything.
Yes.
So and he was 1731.
Hear that thunder?
Yes.
You know, that brings up the point of a Stradivarius. You know, that's Italian as well. And they just can't make a Stradivarius like, you know.
Stradivarius did?
Yeah, they can't do it. I mean, like, they have all the technology in the world. And people are thinking, you know, one of the theories is that it's that part of the world that grows wood. And the climate and the wood and everything combines to form that perfect, you know, like, combination thing. That's just one theory. They just don't know. Yeah. You know?
And maybe it's not as great as some of the other woods. But maybe it's just the sound that...
Standard, right? Yeah. He set the standard.
Has become something that we associate with
loudness war. Good segue here.
Oh, the loudness war.
Okay, so I was talking to Steve about the loud. He's the one that told me about the loudness war, and I go, "What the fuck is that?" So I started looking it up, and to me personally, I think there is a part of it is truth, and then part of it is just mass hysteria. Everybody's jumping in on the bandwagon. There's just loud. Okay, so what the can you describe it?
I think so. Is Kevin paying attention?
You know what loudness war is? The loudness war.
It's a recording. When people are mastering these records, what's going on really is that, let's say you record, Andy records, you know, album A, and then you record album B, and then to get airplay, there you want airplay, and you're kind of battling his songs. So what does your mastering guy do? Is he crank up the volume a little bit on there? So when your song comes on, it's louder, right? So what happens when you turn up that volume on your recording? Well, you're going to make some sacrifices in that recording, and you're going to lose some definition.
Yeah,
in the track,
it's less dynamic. So yes. If you take it technically, if one thing's loud, everything else has to be loud too. So there's no more dynamic
the
in your music.
The floor is not as low.
Exactly.
And so you've got this constant clipping.
Constant, yeah. You got this. Everything's pushed to the top at its max. So when you push everything to the top at its max, it's one uniform loud piece of music.
And they call that brick walling, because if you were to look at it on,
red light.
Yeah, it looks like a solid. The levels max. Look like one solid.
Yes,
block.
Everything's pushed
as
up.
As opposed to this kind of nice, like music is supposed to look. You know, you've got lows and you've got highs, and the music is in between the notes, and you know all the.
All the frequencies, all the sound waves are pushed at its maximum. Up. Yeah. So you get this uniform piece of like just it's
noise.
Like you can look at it, you go, and they say that, you know, the people that if your music's louder, it's gonna make people notice it more, and it's associated with quality, so they're more likely if something's louder, you're gonna remember it more, it overtakes the other song, so therefore you sell more albums. That is the somewhat conspiracy theory that the record labels do this on purpose. I don't know. That's still kind of gray. I think it's feasible, but there's no actual proof of anybody ever admitting that. But there is a loudness war, because I've talked to a lot of sound engineers, and they do. They say, I want to make your music competitive. What does that mean?
Yeah, competitive means loud.
That's all it means. And so when you take a listen to the actual dynamic music, it sounds so much better. And guess what? You were telling me that you can't listen to it because your ears get tired after a while.
They do.
It's just way too much. But that's what the kids are used to. So my point was that, so my point is that iTunes decides that they're going to do, I think that they're doing the wrong thing. They're going to do something about this loudness war. So what they did is like a high percentage of music is distributed through iTunes, and it has to be played through an iTunes player. So therefore, they have control over how it's going to sound by their software. So what they do is that they push the volume down on everything, or not the volume, but the levels down on everything. So therefore, the songs that were mixed without being too loud benefit, because it sounds great. The songs that are too loud, when you lower the volume, guess what? You're going to have a quieter mess, right? A quieter, muddy piece of crap. So therefore, you are doing a disadvantage. How do they know that's not interpretation? How do they know that writing music is geared towards that? With that target in mind, how you know that's not part of the artistic statement itself, being loud? So they're kind of like actually interfering with expression. That's my opinion. So I don't think that they think they're doing something like greater than an ideal that they have, like something above and beyond.
I posted a video on my Facebook wall about that. That it talks about the death of recorded music because everything is all monotonous and we're playing it quality enough to have what the original artist intended to sound like, whether it's sound.
I don't think that's what
it compresses.
Yeah,
I mean that's a different thing
that's
too.
A different,
but
yeah.
But
the compression quality.
What Andy's talking about, and it's not just iTunes. It's all these like streaming services that are coming online now. You know, Spotify, Pandora, and all them. What they're doing is they're taking the music, and some music's loud, some music's quiet, and they're kind of leveling them. You know, I think iTunes calls it sound check, but it's basically taking all the music across the board and trying to tweak it to where it's all.
It's like a McDonald's hamburger. They went.
So when one song comes on to the next, there's not this drastic change.
It actually can hurt your ears, right?
And so the music that's pushed way up here is getting squashed down anyway, right? So why squeeze all the life out of it to make it louder when it's just going to be pushed down anyway?
Right, so they're forcing people to master differently, and that I think is not right because, you know, that's part of music now. Some kids are used to that, you know. Yes, there's some music that's totally, you know, that's not, you know, it's not suitable for that, but there is some music that was meant or was written that way. How do they know that? So by doing that, they're hoping that it's going to change, you know, the way that people mix. And I don't think it's changed anything yet, but maybe it has. I haven't seen any like engineer or even producer that I've talked to that does not want, you know, let's say you're a band. Would you want your stuff to be loud? I would. Would you? Say that you knew more kids would buy it because of they associate loudness with quality, right?
What I would want is the best quality of that song.
What is that? And who determines what that best, you know, like?
No, I think the artist determines that.
And they all want it loud.
and loud doesn't have anything to do with the recording. Louding has something to do with the playback system, right? So if you want it louder, then the person can turn it up.
Well, loudness is actually part of the process of getting it ready to go.
Yes.
Well, loudness is actually part of the whole process. So you got your recording. You got recording, and you do mixing, and then you do mastering. Mastering is where loudness comes in.
Yes.
So it's part of the process. It's not the after effect. So you make that decision right there. You don't make that decision afterwards. So it's intentional.
You can make a decision to make it louder.
But it's not the same. We're talking about how it's mixed. No matter if you turn it up or down, it's going to still have that same waveform.
Right.
So it's going to be like compressed no matter how you listen to it. It's going to be like just a quieter mess, if you think it's a mess.
I've got a song here. Okay,
because if you master it right, you can turn it at any volume and it'll still be the same.
And this term we're talking about is called dynamic range.
That's not what's happening.
Range between the lowest
and
then the highest. And there's websites out there where you can look up songs, right? A crappy song is a dynamic range of like 5. The lowest point to the highest point is like 5 dB. Whereas a song... I'm about to play a song that has a dynamic range of 18. You know, 18 decibels difference between the quietest segments and the loudest segments. And
are you prepared for this?
Only in a fact that I yes, kind of.
You just thought of it.
I have a song that I know has
finally
a really
somebody's
high,
prepared on the show.
Yeah, I have a song that I just happen to know has a really big dynamic
range.
I'm
kind of interested to hear this.
And it's you know, it's a very simple song, so there's not a lot of instruments, and there's, you know, I'm sure you have too, that the music is not the notes, the music is in between the notes, right? The silence in between the notes, and I've kind of grown to like this air around the notes, and
there's a lot of air in a podcast, a lot of dead air.
You can really hear it in this song, and this is a really old song, but
what's the name of it?
It's called Country Boy.
I never heard of it.
No, you probably never heard it before.
Who does it?
Muddy Waters.
I've heard of them. Okay, so I'm looking at the meters here. Yeah, it's I wish I could see the waveform of this. Well, it's coming out right here, but I don't have it loud enough.
Don't say I don't love you. Because I stayed
so,
out all night.
To do the example, let's take this song, Kevin. What they want in loudness is everything to be loud. So they would push up the vocals. They would push up the bass. They would push up. Everybody's competing for each other until there's no headroom left. So then it compresses. Once it compresses, then you just get this uniform wave.
You don't get any quiet segments.
It's just everything's filled in. It's everything needs to, everything's competing with each other.
Yes. And there's what happens is you get fatigued by it. And people nowadays don't listen to music for long periods of time.
I never noticed that till you pointed it out.
Why do you think that is? I think it's because you kind of get sick of listening to music after a while because it's not creating this emotional response that you just want to listen to it. It's just kind of background
that's
noise.
That's dissonant, right?
But this, I mean, just listen to this.
What if you hate the blues? No, I love the blues.
You can't hate the blues. That doesn't exist, that person.
Because I don't hold you in my arms.
I bet Hitler does. That's pretty cool. Like, you know, a good example also is like Dark Side of the Moon. I think that would be a very dynamically recorded album.
Sure,
yeah.
Is. I'm sure all Pink Floyd albums are.
It's spiritual almost, you know, like the Dark Side of the Moon. This one, in a sense, is kind of spiritual too. It kind of takes you somewhere. Whereas I can see how when it's too loud, it takes you for somewhere really briefly and then you bail.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that place is usually like chaotic.
It's the next track. What's next?
Yeah, well, they're
or shuffle.
And then you go, well, there has to be a break somewhere, and it never comes, right? It's just constant barrage of this just loudness. I didn't notice it until Steve sent me this MP3 of this, and it's a pop song, this girl singing. I don't know what it was.
It was that Lana Del Rey song.
Right, and I didn't believe him. I listened to it. I could not listen to it. And I can handle.
She's hot. And the music, her music.
Really?
No,
I haven't seen it.
Well, I mean.
Let me pull her up. What's her name?
Lana Del Rey. And her music is great. Whoever produced that album fucked it up. Really, I mean, you want to listen to it.
What's her last name?
I bought Del Rey. R-E-Y. R-E-Y. And I've got plenty of it.
She's pretty hot.
I bought the high-res version of it just in case maybe.
I remember that.
Can you Google Ume Bands?
No, I'm a country boy.
What's it?
I just love to stay.
I think I've seen this. She's topless. Not topless. She has big boobs and she plays. Oh, yeah, it's a different YouTube.
So have you been watching your decibel meter over there?
Not really. Every once in a while, I remember to.
But it would go pretty high. And then it would
low. Kevin's the only one that clipped. And your music clipped by 75. We can fix it.
I'm going to play another track. And I'm sure you guys both know this song very, very well. And the reason I play this, I don't know why I'm playing this, but something about the drums, the way AC/DC handles drums is just so much different than other bands. And they're just very minimalistic about it.
Oh, 2/4. Yeah. Yeah, my kids, it's the same drum beat.
I mean,
my first concert, I was 11.
I mean, it takes a lot of restraint for a rock band to play a snare drum by itself.
This reminds me of high school.
This probably has a lot of range, too, just because there's a lot of. Space in between the notes. To me, it makes good
sense. Good sense. Yeah. Okay, we're at an hour and 9 seconds. I think that's a good place to wind down here. Do y'all have anything else you want to continue? Or
no.
Okay. All right.
All right, wait. I'm going to play a song. One more song.
Okay, one more song.
One more snippet of a song.
And then we will wind down.
Since we're kind of on a blues kick, this is kind of a fairly new to the scene.
I was using that as a segue. As perfect to like segue out, you know, that AC/DC song.
Yeah.
You
know, like, it was pretty good for that. But
I mean, you got more of that came from.
I think blues is the main influence on rock and roll, and
it is.
You can hear it in pretty much everything.
That's
for
where
the most part.
Rock came from.
That's where it came from. And, you know, some people don't veer too far away from that sound, like Jack White, but some people take it to a different level. But this chick is from Tennessee, and I'll just play it, see what you think.
Who's this? This sounds kind of 70s. I like 70s, by the way.
Her name is Valerie Yoon.
This is new?
New.
No way.
Well, 2012, I think.
I like it when like people try to explore some of the older styles.
She's not the best guitar player in the world, but she's got a lot of emotion.
It's not bad. I feel like I'm at Woodstock. It's got a lot of emotion there. It's like a song that defines a generation, right? It's like it's got power, man. It's kind of folky. I'm not into folk music, but it's got some coolness to it.
That's what she looks like.
Dude, this is cool. That bass line, man. Oh, yeah.
I love it. I've seen her twice now. And she's just like, she's just the most likable artist that I've watched lately. And her voice is piercing.
I love this song. It's awesome, dude. And this is new?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Very soulful.
Yeah, that bass line is kick. Want me to wind down? Want me to wind down? Keep it going. Okay, well that wraps it up for this first broadcast of the Monk Show. I think it went okay. You know, we got a lot of technical difficulties throughout the show, but you know, we're just kind of winging it right now. If you joined us, God help you. But we will see you next time, and we're gonna be back here next Friday. It is Friday today, next Friday, and we're gonna do this once every Friday. So thanks for joining
us. We're gonna do it once a month.
Once every month, I'm sorry.
Yes, I would love to do it every Friday, but that's not realistic.
All right. This is Andy from The Monk Show.
Steve from The Monk Show.
Later.